welcome to the Dangerous Men podcast. It's good to have you here with us. Thanks for listening. If you are listening to the audio version of this, please give us a rating. If you're listening to the YouTube version or watching us on Instagram or wherever you're listening to this, subscribe, follow along, follow back, whatever, so that you don't miss one of these. Comment, share, all the things. It's amazing how little connections on the interweb make more people aware of this important ministry, this work. It helps support and grow the channel, and it helps get more young men free from various things in their life. So today we're going to go through all of the chapters of Dangerous Men, written by one of the guys at this table. The oldest guy at the table will let you guess which one it is. And just kind of walk through.
I'll drink to that.
Yeah. Walk through at a high level why, and I'm particularly curious and excited to talk to Lowell here about the stories and the reasons and originally how these things were sort of brought into being.
If I only knew why.
That's right. And then talk a little bit in terms of practical application, going through the coursework, going through the book, going through the process. As a guy in a small group, what happens as a guy goes through each one of these lessons? So we're just going to dive right in. We're going to start with lesson one. And you say frequently, we always start with identity. And practically, yeah. That's what it looks like.
Look at there. The first chapter
of the book is identity theft, taking your life back. So tell me about identity. Tell me why we started with identity and why it's so, so crucially important.
Grant? Well, the first thing we want is to send us your mother's maiden name and social security number. Oh, wrong identity theft. Identity.
No, I better go.
That's way more wisdom.
You lost me there since you started talking. Our identity is the most important thing we have, and it's the most important thing in our life with Christ. And if we get that straight, everything else gets straightened out. And if we don't get it straight, or we don't believe what Jesus says our identity is, then everything else doesn't get basically straightened out in our lives. So if we actually believe what Jesus says about us, then that straightens out of who we are and what we can accomplish in life and what our purpose is and gives us meaning and walking with God. So it's absolutely the most important thing we could learn and do.
Yeah, I what immediately comes to mind is sort of outside the chapter, but if you look at even more broadly groups or programs around the world, even secular groups that are trying to help people deal with addictions or issue wide variety of issues, yeah. So frequently, even in a secular context, the core of what they need to get someone to understand is their identity. And they might use different language,
yeah.
Beliefs or ideals or whatever. They might have different language to describe it, but it really is that same central universal truth in a lot of ways, is what you believe about yourself and where that comes from does so much to order behavior, does so much to corrupt or to purify think right or wrong thinking, and matters a great deal.
So the problem becomes if we get our identity from what our society, our culture, or what the world around us says, that becomes a problem for those of us who follow Jesus.
Yeah.
We have to get our identity from what he says and believe that actually, and then walk in who he says we are.
Yeah. That's so true. And I mean, yeah, I was having a conversation recently with a guy, a secular guy, and that kind of came up in the conversation is, you know, there's a difference between like throwing out nice sentiments about like, I'm a good person.
Yeah.
Like right. You're like, you like make up the opposite of whatever negative belief you have, like self-hatred.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, you need to reverse self-hatred. What do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love my, you know, like
you
I
say
love
nice
myself,
things about yourself,
right? Yeah, right. Yeah. And like,
and that's psychological. I mean, that helps a little, but
it's a half truth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not the core,
right? So yeah. It's where does that come from? Like, where does the love of self or the fact that you are loved, like, where does that reside? And who says that about you?
Yeah.
Is it just you shouting it into the ether that makes that true about you and changes things? Yeah. I mean, that is the beauty of psychology and neuroscience and science in general, is that the more we understand about it, the more it proves what's in scripture and what's here. And, you know, when you go through the first chapter, one of the most impactful things the first time I went through it was the list of identity statements, which are all biblical, straight from scripture. And I put that, taped that up on the mirror in my college dorm room, where so often I looked in that mirror prior to that and experienced self-hatred and even said out loud, "I hate you," or "you're worthless," or whatever. I so frequently looked in that mirror and hated the person that looked back. And after going through the first lesson, the exercise, the activation is to go through that list of identity statements and to say over your life out loud what's true about you. Again, not because Lowell says that that's true about you, but because that's biblical. It's what God says about you. If you were to be a son of God, if what he says is true. And to read that out over my life. And it was amazing how quickly, you know, it wasn't a night and day difference, but I could tell the way that I walked through life doing that and not doing that changed.
What we believe about ourselves tends to show how we act.
Yeah.
Always. So if we believe we're stupid and dumb and crazy, we act like that. Mm-hmm. If we believe that we're God's son and his boy and has a purpose in life, then we start acting like that.
Yeah, I love the quote from chapter one of, you can't live in a way that's contradictory to what you really believe about yourself.
Yeah.
So I always thought about it as like a onion, and I have all these issues on the outside. And like you're kind of talking about, just throwing out these nice sentiments and like trying to fix the issues on the outside is never going to fix the root issue at the center of that onion. And just going right to the heart and just cutting it wide open. And identity is like the center of that onion. And then everything else flows out from the center. So that's why it's chapter one.
Yeah. So we've all led quite a few dangerous men groups ourselves. What do you see happen when a guy walks through that chapter? What are the revelations that guys experience, the takeaways? I mean, you started to touch on it there. But what do they leave, and what do you see change in a guy's mind as he starts to consider, oh, my behaviors really must be telling me something about what I really believe? Because I think one of the biggest things, I'll answer my own question first. One of the biggest things that I think I see is most guys walk throughout their life very unaware that any of that stuff is playing out.
Yeah.
Because they're not sitting down in a group like that, considering the impact of identity on their daily behaviors. They're just behaving and not thinking about it. And then all of a sudden they take a half step back, even one night, and consider that might possibly be true. And they're like, that actually makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and where did I start believing the lies about myself?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course we know Jesus flips everything, you know, on its head, basically, compared to all the world's cultures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd say in groups, oftentimes it's not like going through chapter one maybe doesn't always register right away, but it is the foundation that I continue to come back to throughout the group, of always going back to those truth and lie statements, always going back to what our true identity is and what Jesus says about us. And it's kind of the foundation for everything. And I think most guys, you usually do like lustimonies before we jump into chapter one. So it's like, well, I thought we were talking about lust and porn and all these other things, and it's like, well, we haven't talked about any of that. It's just identity. But as the group goes on and as they go through the process, they start to realize how foundational and fundamental identity is. Hence being the starting chapter.
That's good. So you just mentioned that we have an exercise or a practice in Dangerous Men called lustimonies, which is, guy comes to group. And in the context of a group, or maybe two sessions, if they go long enough, or the group's large enough. I once did a dangerous man group of, I think, of like 18 guys up in the attic in our college house.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm pretty sure Les Demodies took 4 nights.
Yeah, and if you don't know, Les Demodies are your sexual history.
Yeah, yeah. And so it really is that process of exposing what behavior is true about the way that you've lived, which then you just said, then you really are invited, sort of in reference, whether identity comes first or after, sort of telling people about the way that you've lived, be oftentimes behind closed doors and or a way that you don't talk about it, or the way you wouldn't talk secret about it to your life. Mother, your secret life.
Yeah.
Is sort of painted in comparison with how you believe or what you believe about yourself.
Yeah, what you believe,
And then maybe you should reconsider what you believe about yourself. It's true. What if you believed what God said? Would that change the way that you look at this?
Yeah.
And then that goes right into, so I guess anything that you want to add in terms of Les Demodies, how it came about, why we use it, why it's such a powerful practice.
That could be a whole podcast.
Yeah. I don't remember how it came about. I just remember that if I was going to try to create a honest, real, authentic group from the very beginning, that's a great way to start. Because, you know, like if the leader goes first and is actually honest, authentic, and real, then everybody else kind of follows suit. They get about 80%, 8% of it. But pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, we all struggle with this.
Yeah. Yeah. All sets men. The tone the entire, rest of the group for sure.
That's awesome. So then it goes into lesson two, which is sexuality, celebrating it.
Yeah. So I think that's one of my, I like all the chapters. I'm going to say one of my favorite chapters. But but we in the church where a lot of Christian men or people grow up in the church and the sexuality is a negative thing. It's like bad, 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 bad. Then you get married. Oh, it's okay now. It's like, no, God created a sexual people. He created sexuality to be holy. You know, the holy sexuality is what we want. And we can live our lives being very sexual. That doesn't mean having sex. I mean, it means being fully human and fully alive in purity. And that's a huge thing that most guys have never figured out or heard. You know, that it's always immediately we turn our sexuality into something negative because, you know, lust and porn and then we just feel awful. So, I mean, that's, I think it's one of the big, you know, aha moments is like to get that straight. Like, oh, wait a minute. God created us sexual. It's okay to be a horny boy. You know, but we could live in holiness with that. You know, it doesn't have to be lustful, awful, perverted thinking.
Right. And we know that sexuality and identity are so deeply tied to it. I mean, it's one of the great value propositions that the world is making to people today, right? Which is your sexuality is normal. Celebrate it however you want, whatever you
kind of sexuality, says.
You define that, make it up, but enjoy it. Like be liberated from the oppression of it being wrong. And so I mean, it's certainly a challenging proposition. How do you change, like what have we done wrong in that area? And as as Christians, in terms of the way that we've taught or the way that we've gone and the way that we've built culture, how did that, even we don't have to say anything and people experience it. I was talking to a guy about our ministry work who's a worship leader at a really big church, community church here in Minnesota. And he's like, oh yeah, like, you know, just porn in general. It's like the thing that nobody talks about, but everybody's doing. And it's like, so everybody knows it and it's under the surface and it's a massive, everybody knows it's a massive issue, but it lives in the dark, right? So anyway, I say all that to say that whole idea or concept feels almost so countercultural that it feels difficult when you say that out loud to not go like, well, then aren't you laying the groundwork or foundation for guys to do then what the world is proposing it looks like to celebrate?
Laying the groundwork for guys to be sexual? Oh, yes, actually they are sexual.
And maybe that's how God designed it.
Yeah, and maybe you have to learn to be okay with your sexuality in purity,
yeah,
just like God designed it. Uh-huh. You know, it's like, yeah. And that's a mind switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you're talking about the value proposition of culture in general. That's in direct response, essentially, to the church's response over however many hundreds of years of, well, we can't control this thing in our sinfulness, so we'll just try and limit it as much as possible. And I mean, you could take that to any other topic, but sexuality being such a driving factor and having so much emotion and whatnot behind it. So yeah, this chapter of reframing it, I feel like this is the chapter that, I mean, even now I'm still continuing to learn of like what that even looks like in my life to have sexuality reframed in God's design, because yeah, he designed it. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And even just on starting to unpack the implications of the whole church and Christ dynamic relationship and being represented in marriage and all these things, it's just like continues to blow your mind. And it's doing a complete disservice to boil it down to the mindset of, yeah, just don't do anything sexual until you get married.
Yeah.
And it's like, that doesn't work.
And never did.
No.
But let's pretend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is it? I'm just curious, and we can end on this. We're at our time. We're coming to the end here. We'll start with chapter 3 next time. I'm curious to know, or if we could even articulate what that would look like, a Christian culture or a church community that had this right, that got this right. What would that look like?
Boy.
Oh, man.
Looks like a dangerous men group.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about the only thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I guess my point is nothing probably changes much in terms of the outward expression of sexuality,
yeah.
Right? In terms of like anything to do with sexuality in the context of that group environment.
Yeah.
It probably looks like a lot less hidden sin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot less hiding, which then leads to a culture, like you're saying, what are the first things that come to mind when I think of guys, a dangerous men group, guys being able to be honest with each other about what's really happening in their day-to-day life.
And dealing with it in a healthy, non-judgmental way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
And accept forgiveness. Oh, that's another chapter.
Yeah, let's get it. Hey, don't get away yet, right? We have to wait until a few weeks from now. Yeah, like vulnerability, authenticity, like people being able to be real and be honest, which logically would lead to a more fulfilling experience and a probably less sexual issues. I mean, yeah. I think that's part of the reality is, right? When you do deal with it, eventually you're almost doing it to come out sideways. And when it comes out sideways, it'll be more painful to deal with than if you just dealt with it up front and honestly at the beginning.
Yeah, the sexual issues become wholly sexual, so it's more fun. You're okay with it. It's, you know, inviting. Yeah,
I think the byproducts. I've had this conversation at with a bunch of different people, but the issue, like we always say, dangerous men's like target market is the good Christian boys, because they are the ones that are living under this massive weight of shame because, like you said, the sexuality comes out sideways, and it's pornography is this easy thing they can hide that's on the side that no one has to know about, that I can have it come out in this perverted way, but I have this immense desire inside of me, but there's no outlet for me in a healthy way that's being presented.
And the culture around them, spoken or unspoken, incentivizes hiding.
Yes.
It's producing shame. It's saying, don't share that
because exactly.
You'll be ashamed. For like you should
might
be ashamed
have to deal with it.
But then there's guys that didn't grow up in that culture that they're like, okay, yeah, I look at porn like it's, yeah, I look at it, but it's not this massive thing in my life that's completely all controlling. I feel completely taken out by, I have no freedom. It's just ruining every part of my life because they don't have that negative constraint where it becomes this.
Still ruins their relationships.
Yes, 100%. But it's not this, like, I am addicted to it. It isn't a big
shame
it.
Thing.
Yes.
The best line I heard is this kid said, before I really met Jesus as real,
yeah,
I didn't have a problem with porn. He said, since when I found out it was after I met Jesus, it became a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then I think of, like, back to your question of what would a Christian community look like with that mindset. I think, yeah, there's this sexual side, but then the byproducts of it creates men that are able to lead well and yeah. not be completely taken out. It creates, like you said, the complete culture of vulnerability and honesty and just effectiveness in our ministry and how we're able to share the gospel with other people. Like mm-hmm. it just makes a community that is way more effective. You read all the Old Testament stories about the quote unquote sin in the camp they had.
Mm-hmm.
You look at David's story, just completely took him out from an effectiveness standpoint mm-hmm. because of the sexual yeah. sin. And it's been going on for thousands of years.
It's almost like it creates dangerous men.
Weird.
Oh, I know.
I wonder where you got the title from.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, we'll end there. There's so much.
We should end there.
So much there to unpack. Today we covered identity theft, the first chapter of Dangerous Men, the practice of lustimonies within the context of a Dangerous Men group, and sharing their sexual history and the powerful component of a Dangerous Men group. That is, and then sexuality, celebrating it, how counterculture that is, both to the world's view of sexuality and oftentimes the experience of young men growing up in a church culture and environment, and how good it would be if more of us were able to embrace sexuality as God's design and the way it's created, and to celebrate that, not just in necessarily private conversation, but in public life, to do that in a healthy way and to figure out what that means.
And feel good about being a man or a woman. Right. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So thanks for joining us again. Like, subscribe, follow, tune in so you don't miss an episode. We're going to be going through the rest of the chapters over the next several weeks and look forward to continue to dive in the power and the transforming work of Jesus through this system, this program, this process.
Process.
And all it's done in the lives of us to begin with, and then all the men that are experiencing it right now. So continue to pray. Go to dmu.org if you are somebody who needs help or wants to bring this to a church or a college that you are a part of or near you, and we'd love to connect.
Everybody needs help with this. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Yeah. No, but
peace. Yeah.